Wildlife and Nature Photography with OM System. This is the Wild Eye Podcast. Hey everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from Wild Eye, and welcome to another episode of the Wild Eye Podcast. I'm going to read something for you. Time does not stand still. It does not take excuses or do repeats. The sun won't ask for your permission to set, a smile comes and goes, and a falcon won't wait for your go-ahead to take flight. When a moment comes, one that makes you feel, you should be ready to capture it. Those moments of beauty are meant to be shared, feelings to be remembered, and images intended to be captured. We are passionate about providing creators with the tools necessary to fight time, outsmart the odds, and break free to go on your adventures, sunshine, rain, or snow. We build uniquely compact and dependable imaging systems with creator-centric innovations that allow you always to be ready to capture those once-in-a-lifetime moments. Make it last forever. Defy the moment with OM System. Now, that's directly off the OM System website, and the reason I gave you that is yesterday I had a conversation with Mark and Dave. They're both from the UK. Mark is one of the senior marketing managers at OM System, and Dave is one of their tech experts. And the reason this conversation happened is I started shooting Olympus in the day about 2016. Actually, let me tell you a quick story. So I was heading out on a private guided safari in 2016, I think it was April, to Mala Mala. And my main weapon that I chose, because I could just take from the Wild Eye rental stock to shoot with particular gear, I took a Nikon D4 and I took a 200-400 lens. I then asked around online about mirrorless, and long story short, Gareth was able to hook me up from Olympus, South Africa at the time, was able to hook me up with an EM1 Mark II and a 40-150 2.8, which is equivalent to an 80-300 2.8, right? Anyway, so I went off, wasn't expecting too much. I just wanted to get an idea because people were asking about this whole mirrorless thing. And when I came back and I downloaded and started processing my images, I realized that the majority of the images that I kept after culling in Lightroom was from this EM1, from this Olympus camera. Looking back now, 8 years later, I know why. I've been talking a lot about the experience of photography. I think the travel industry is changing. I think the photographic travel industry is changing in that people are not going to be driven so hectically as they have been by the images they produce, using that as a metric for success of a trip, but rather by the experiences they have. We've seen it over the last few years. People want to do more things. They just don't want to photograph only. They want to, for example, go and ride a four-wheel motorbike on the Makarikari Pans. They want to mountain bike on the Thule. They want to go hike in Iceland. They want to take a hot air balloon over Cappadocia in Turkey. But they also want to be able to capture and document those experiences. So over the last few years, I've traveled a lot. I do travel a lot for what I do. But having a smaller camera bag has made the world of difference to my experience of photographic travel, of wildlife and nature photography, because I don't have to haul around all these massive lenses, all these massive cameras, right? So looking back now, I know that the reason I took more images in 2016 with my Olympus camera was that it was easier. The experience was easier. In the conversation you guys are about to hear, I mentioned that at one stage in the Mara, I was on an EM1X Olympus camera at a 300mm f4, which is an equivalent to a 600, shooting handheld. I was hanging my arm out the window, shooting past my clients, because I'm always behind them, that's what we do, and I could handhold 600mm with a flip screen and get perfect images. So the experience is what matters. I would still be happy to go up against anybody with any brand and put my hat in the ring to create amazing images. I have shot Olympus now in every single type of light, every single type of environment, from desert to snow and everything in between, and I'm yet to be disappointed. I know a lot of people will say, oh yeah, but it's not full frame. And we talk about this in the conversation, but it's what you are using it for. If you're shooting a 50, 60 megapixel full frame and you're only posting on Instagram, why? Why? And you're tracking the stuff around the world, make it easy for yourself. So the conversation came from, I've been working now with Olympus South Africa, Gareth and them, which is now OM System South Africa, for quite a long time, and Michael from Wild Eye, Michael Laubscher, myself, give them some images to use, and it's been a great road, but they're looking at reintroducing the brand locally and internationally, because one of the things that excites me is and you'll hear this in the conversation, is OM System is looking to become an outdoor brand, not just a photographic brand. And that is awesome because it maps perfectly to people wanting to get outdoors, go and do adventures, go for a hike, go for a walk, go and see the waterfall, go on safari, and be able to take a small compact camera with you that can produce the goods every single time. And I don't just say that, I know because I've done it. The other thing that I really is or blew my mind and still does is the computational photography elements that have been built into the OM system. Now, ProCapture I've carried on many times in the past. It's like magic. We speak about that. But some of the new developments and the refreshed developments that they're rolling into the OM2, which is the brand new OM system camera. Gareth, you have my number, please, if you have an extra one laying around, just saying. it's amazing. It's amazing what you can do in the field, but not having to drag everything around. So I'm going to quickly just read you one more piece here of kind of where OM came from, OM Digital Solutions, and then we'll go right into the conversation with Mark and Dave. So the birth of OM overturned traditional beliefs concerning SLR cameras. There are two key principles surrounding the new company name, OM Digital Solutions. The first is OM, which represents the Olympus OM system, originally developed in the 1970s. OM was developed with an uncompromising attitude towards overturning the conventional perception of SLR cameras. Using OM in a new company name symbolizes our brand identity and embodies the environment of constant challenge and the development of new products and technologies. The developer who created the OM was Yoshisha Maitani. He took on the challenge of SLR cameras being big, heavy, and loud. So just as an aside, OM is Olympus Maitani, so that's where OM comes from. First, he proceeded to develop without compromise in terms of high functionality and performance levels, allowing the photographic possibilities to cover any natural object that we came into contact with, under the slogan of From Space to Bacteria. Next, Maitani made efforts to reduce size and weight, stating, "The reason that I do not like to use SLR cameras is that they are so heavy." He always developed from the perspective of the photographer, then pursued differences that made it possible to realize that it is smaller and lighter than any other camera previously made, just by placing it in one's hand. This resulted in the Olympus OM1. Now, like I said, I've been shooting Olympus since 2016. I was lucky enough to get my hands on an OM1. OM2 hopefully is next. And it's been amazing. The combination of ease of use when traveling, the computational elements, the experience of shooting with something smaller while still producing is amazing. Now, I know people get very, very into their brands, like, I only shoot this, I only shoot that. Whatever brand you're shooting, I invite you to listen to this conversation with an open mind, because the way that Mark and Dave towards the end explains the holistic approach to photography and why Olympus is aimed at, intentionally or not, the outdoor world makes for a very, very strong argument. Now, I am comfortable shooting any brand. I've used Nikon, Canon, Sony, I've used them all, but my personal choice has been, for all the reasons I've said and what you're about to hear in this conversation, has been OM System, and I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. Okay, Mark, David, hi guys, welcome. Thank you very much for your time. Before we dig in and kind of go towards the tech side and what the cameras are and stuff, I thought a brief history of OM Systems and how it evolved from Olympus, because for a lot of people I speak to, when they hear I'm shooting OM System, is like, was that Olympus? What happened? So, Mark, maybe it's something for you to tackle this one, is what is the evolution from Olympus to OM Systems? Why and how did that happen?
It's pretty simple story. Olympus is a big company and it evolved since the very first product was in the early 1900s, was microscopes. So 90% of the business has always been optics. And cameras came next. Then in the 50s, they brought in endoscopes, which is this fiber optic scopes that they use a lot in the medical and in industrial areas. And that became rapidly the biggest part of the business. But it's a very different sell, a very different customer base to the more consumer-oriented ones. And at various stages, the business, there was a lot of cooperation with the R&D because it's all optics. But in the end, they decided that the two businesses were too different. So eventually they spun off the camera business around 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago. So it was bought out by a Japanese venture capitalist called JIP, mm-hmm. and run as a wholly owned, separate, not wholly owned, but a separate business completely.
Right.
And part of the deal is that because they wanted to keep the Olympus brand name on medical devices and didn't want the crossover, mm. there's a period of time where the brand evolves into OM system on the camera devices. Mm. In other words, 99% of the business is the same people, same products, mm-hmm. but the name is gradually changing. Every new product we bring out now has the OM system brand.
Yeah. I'm correct in saying I think the OM1 was the first body that featured both. It said Olympus and OM1.
It's the OM5 was the first one to carry OM that was systems the first. Brand.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think OM1, the original OM1 had both brands on it, which was a bit of a compromise. Mm. It'll get clearer as time goes on.
Yeah. Because it's a lot of people is, I'll take the camera, I'm shooting the OM1 currently, looking to get my hands with the OM2. But people will see this and they're like, OM systems, what is that? And they're like, well, it used to be Olympus. So the main reason was exactly, it was just kind of a natural evolution. Moving forward, just you said, so the OM5 and the OM1, from now on, we're not going to see the Olympus name on cameras.
Correct.
Okay. That's and just true. Random one, OM is an acronym for?
Well, it actually comes from Olympus and the designer of the original OM1, Spaitani. Mm-hmm. That was the name, that's where OM came yeah. from. It was basically an homage to his influence on the design direction.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because it's always had this kind of vintage look about it. And yeah, it's just nice to carry those things through. It's a very visual thing when you shoot because I know when I go out into the field from a wildlife point of view, everybody has these monster lenses. And I rock up with my little 40-150 and my M1. It sells very well. So it's nice to know because when this change happened, I know locally in South Africa, a lot of people, when they heard Olympus is being bought out, in inverted commas, they were like, oh God, jump ship immediately. It's not going to work.
Mm. I think a change is always, but this is nothing new in our industry, but change sure. is always a bit scary. The plus side is that there was always, as the medical business got bigger and bigger, and when cameras... when digital camera market was booming 15 years ago, it was big in cash terms, but it was tough for anybody to make money, and not just us. Most of the manufacturers struggled because it was such a volatile environment. Now it's settled back down to an enthusiast to professional
yes.
product, really. Mm-hmm. It means that the size of the business relative to medical was pretty small, and therefore decision-making was always a little bit difficult. If you imagine you're in a big company and you're just one part of it, sure. getting stuff done is harder. So it's actually a plus side spinning the company out because the decision-making process is much shorter. There's a lot more concentration on the product. So it's a good thing. It naturally, people get a little wary when it happens. But actually, for the future, it should be a positive thing. Mm.
It's quite interesting. I mean, Dave, maybe to pull you in on this next one here is the change of lineup from camera. So I got introduced to the brand, and the first one that I started working with Gareth, who runs the Southern Africa side of us for here, was the, I think it was the OM-D1 Mark II. And then I played with the 3, I had the 1, and then I jumped onto the OM-1, which was the newest one. I haven't got the OM-2 yet. So the current lineup of cameras, when we say OM Systems, new brand, what are the current lineup of cameras that we have available to the people?
Well, it's complex and simple in the same sense, really, because ultimately, as a company now, we have 3 cameras. We have OM1, the Mark One version, the one that was carrying both the Olympus and the OM system name.
Yes. Yes.
And then we had the OM5, which was the first camera to be completely OM system branded. And now we've got OM1 Mark II. So those are the 3 products that the company has created and sort of carries forward from. And whilst there will still be kind of other cameras, let's say, for example, EM10 Mark IV, still coming through, through retailers and things like that. They are existing cameras that were around when we kind of started to go through this transition process from Olympus to OM system. Mm-hmm. So, and it does create, there is still, I think, even 3 years down the line, Mark, are we now over just a little bit over 3 years down the line, there is still some consistent confusion about where models lie, because I think whenever you change a numbering system primarily, and then a camera name in itself, there's always going to be some complex kind of errors from the public point of view. So realistically, to keep it simple, we've got OM1 Mark 1, OM1 Mark 2, and the OM5 mid-series, which kind of is our enthusiast kind of middle-ground camera. Yeah. And yet, nothing in an OM10 range at all. So,
obviously we can't go deep under the cover here, but is there looking at that for the future, if people want to jump into the base level?
I think at the moment we're still focusing on the fact that we do have the EM10. The Mark IV is still a very viable product. As yet, there haven't been any conversations around anything else, just so that we can focus on EM10 Mark IV as it is, really.
One of the cameras I see the most often, so I'm shooting one of them, Michael Laubscher, who's one of my guides at Wild Eye and who also represents the brand on this side, he's got two M1X. I've got one of them. Where does that fit in now? Because that was a beast. Where does that fit into the current lineup? What's the future of something like that? Do I have to sell it? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, the M1X is still a very powerful camera. I bought one, you know, 6 feet away from me. The thing with the M1X is it was very conceptual as a Micro Four Thirds camera anyway because of the size of it. It was designed to have that integrated grip system and dual battery cartridge as a point to very specific types of photographers. Not only in what they were shooting, but also I think the ergonomics of how they wanted a camera to handle. There are a lot of people out there that had said, I absolutely love when it was Olympus and now OM system. I love the product, but I've got such great juicy hands. I really struggle to kind of carry around a camera that's not a little bit more meaty. And so the EM1X really kind of created a point for them to be able to integrate into the system. And particularly, if you think about when we released the EM1X, we were also on the sort of pivotal tipping point of releasing the biggest lens Micro Four Thirds have ever seen. Yes. So in terms of creating a balanced product, it was primed for it to kind of come in.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it did. And no, there is absolutely no need to sell the EM1X. The system as a product performs magnificently well.
It does.
Always use future lenses that are released. And I think it definitely serves purpose for many people in both consumer and professional areas of photography.
Agreed, 100%. So for people who are currently sitting with an EM1X and some of the older Olympus cameras, can they be assured for how long are they still going to get software updates, new lenses, stuff like this? Because that was one of the concerns some of my clients had on a safari recently is I think she had the M10, one of the beginner ones. So she was concerned about should she sell this because what if she can't get software updates? Is she now lost? So and how long is that going to keep happening?
Let me jump in on that because it does vary and jumps around a little and depending on where you are. The rules keep changing.
Yes.
There's a general move amongst most countries towards trying to increase the amount of time the products are serviceable. And traditionally, there's been a seven-year, it's not a formal thing, but there's been a seven-year general period where it said companies will try to make sure they keep spare parts. But keep in mind with electronics, it's complex because you can't predict how many placement sensors you're going to need or how many processors which go out of date very quickly. So it's not quite that straightforward to do that. But there's a general push towards longer life cycles, but that takes time. You can't guarantee it. If for one reason or another, you try and keep a number of spare parts, you can't simply go and order more of certain items. Given that, the software side, generally, it's a similar thing. They'll support as far as they can. Products don't tend to need updates after the first couple of years. If there are any bugs, they usually appear then. The trend towards updates in software to change the product depends on the model. That also varies. It's not always possible to bring out new features to new cameras. Certainly the entry-level cameras don't usually get that. So it shouldn't be a concern, but there will come a time when it's not possible to get things fixed if you drop them or something else happens to them. And that period quite often is from 7 years out. Okay. So
it's a decent amount of time.
Yeah, it's a rule of thumb. And I think it's a lot linked to general electronics and that problem of keeping spares. So don't panic about it.
Good.
Don't worry about lens compatibility. That's not going to change.
Yeah.
It's more to do with whether it's realistic to get things fixed. But over that sort of period is reasonable.
Yeah. So, I mean, the you mentioned lens compatibility. As it stands now, just as for people listening, because we're obviously trying to create an awareness around the brand. I've loved the brand. I mean, for me, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, is the experience of photography has been fun again. Like, I travel a lot, and to have a small camera bag but still have the power in it, it's been amazing. So from a camera and lens point of view, connectivity-wise between the two, what lenses can people fit? Because they're asking, is there a Sigma? Is there all these third parties? So you've got to explain there's the mount size and so on and so forth. So what is compatible on the OM Systems bodies?
Well, I mean, ultimately, at the moment, the key to sort of future thoughts about yes. lenses, current and future thoughts about lenses, is that the Micro Four Thirds system was started as an open standard, as a unlicensed platform that people can just kind of get into and create for. Mm-hmm. And as a result, now there's over 140 Micro Four Thirds lenses across many manufacturers. So that would be ourselves. We're talking. If you also probably key to point out at this stage as well, the branding around the lenses has not changed at all. So
these
have always been the Zuiko lenses, M. Zuiko, mm-hmm. when we became the Micro Four Thirds system.
Yeah.
So the M. Zuiko lenses continue on as part of what we make with the OM system cameras. You've got Panasonic Leica, Sigma, Samyang, Laowa, Seven Artisan, many other brands that are making Micro Four Thirds lenses. And amongst those, you have a combination of ones that will either be an autofocusing system like the Panasonic lenses, and some of the Sigma ones, or a manual focus only system like the Laowa. And they'll work in various different ways and to different degrees, depending on how their respective manufacturers have designed them through that system.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forwards, everything that we make will be always native compatible. And I think there'll always be a demand within the system for Micro Four Thirds lenses from third-party manufacturers as well.
Yes.
So I think we're never going to experience a loss of numbers in terms of what's available for Micro Four Thirds in general. Yep.
Did you say 140 different lenses?
It's over 130, I think, at the moment, at last count. I don't know exactly the last count because there are some very sort of unknown Far Eastern manufacturers that are just making randomly, you know, like a 12mm, would be £100, you know, but based on the fact that they've just got a sort of 12mm party lens kind of thing. And these party lenses are great, and the whole benefit of the system is that you can just sort of dip in and out of that lens ecosystem. Now, obviously, bearing in mind the way that we've kind of pushed forward with the lenses that we've released recently, they have a very specific target market. Not only is that very much at the sort of premium end of the market anyway in terms of how we build the product, maintaining a weather-sealed range of lenses is super key to us, and we're one of the few manufacturers that does that part of it. So that's where we have this sort of stepped system in technical availability.
Gotcha. So just two questions on the back of that is, you mentioned a specific target market. I'm curious as to what that is, considering where I'm coming from, South Africa, Africa, wildlife, landscape, but also where does the pro, what is a pro lens and why is it called a pro lens? That's another question people ask very often.
So I'll tell you a little bit about the lenses. Mark's probably a better person to explain the sort of target audience that we're kind of in production for at the moment. Lens-wise, we've got tons of lenses that will cover all sorts of different genres, and some of them, we go through almost three stage points. We have our sort of standard, premium, and pro kind of areas. The pro area is the only one that is labeled the pro. And those pro lenses will primarily be of a weather-sealed nature and probably of a constant aperture if they're a zoom lens. So you'd be looking at something like the 40-150 f2.8, fully weather sealed, the 300 F4 fully weather sealed, mm-hmm. and then of course the 150 to 400 F4.5 constant aperture fully weather sealed lens. So yep. those are the sort of pro series. There are some non-pro lenses that are supported with weather sealing, and that's primarily because of the areas that they'll be used in. So you've got things okay. like the 60mm macro lens.
Yes.
It'd be really, really strange for us to produce, given that we have the technology and the production capability to make weather sealed lenses, yes. to do a macro lens that's to be used outdoors, maybe in some kind of drippy conditions,
yep.
if it wasn't weather sealed. So our 30mm macro and our 60, they're not pro lenses, but they are weather sealed.
Gotcha.
And then we've got a couple of our fairly lengthy standard zooms, sort of mm-hmm. our 40 to 150 and our 12 to 200
yep.
that are weather sealed as well, just because it's likely that they may well be used as a traveler tool. And if gotcha. You're traveling around the world, you're not always traveling in, you know, sublime conditions.
Of course. Interesting. Sorry, go for it.
No, just I was just about to say, outside of that, the sort of target around it is very much specific to the way the company's been investing and researching its technology. And like I said, Mark's probably better armed to explain that.
Just curious, before the target, Mark. Sorry, Mark, just a quick question. The weather sealing, right? I've had my system, I've got a whole bunch of different ranges. I think most of them are pro, but I've had them in snow and rain and dust, and it holds up beautifully. I've seen these videos on YouTube where people literally have their camera in the shower. I don't know what they're taking pictures of. I'd rather not know. But yeah. they've got these things. Is it that good or is that just marketing? I mean, people ask, have I put my camera in the shower? I'm like, no, I have not.
But, you know, I've been with what was Olympus and then now our system. It'll be 11 years in September. And all the way through those 11 years, I've seen, and we have to say as well, that this is not us. They're not our people. They're
100%.
Photographers or consumers that want to have a bash at this. We've seen them running them under the kitchen sink and in the shower and things like that. Now, what's really important to remember is that we've had two grades of weather sealing. We've had IPX and then IP53. We're now running IP53 for pretty much most of the new products because it is the better version, and we have the production capability for rating it that. That's gotcha. A third-party rating, by the way. We don't just offer that.
Okay.
And that means that we can do various things to it. So the IPX rating was a slightly lower splash-proof rating, albeit still very, very good.
Yeah.
And now the IP53 one is about spraying the cameras at various angles for up to an hour, and it's still being, completely sealed. What we say is that unless you're getting a tough camera, it's not a submersible product.
Yeah.
And I have seen somebody lose who thought it would be an interesting experiment to do to submerse, and it wasn't at the time. It was an EM1 Mark III, so an OMD, an Olympus OMD mm-hmm. EM1 Mark III, with a 40-150 Pro lens on it, and submersed it into a water butt in the garden.
Yeah.
For a good, 20 seconds. Suffice to say, it took a bit of water on because it was under pressure,
Sure.
But we get people in the shower. I've personally risked it a couple of times at when I've visited. We used to do a lot of camera clubs around the country in the UK, and we'd get people who were very suspicious of the weather sealing. And I was feeling brave. I would quite happily empty a bottle of water onto my camera and lens.
Yeah,
you know. We don't encourage people to do it.
No. Yeah. It's interesting that because I've had, I mean, obviously we host safaris, we take people to all these places, and so often the little bit of rain starts and people are hiding their things, they're putting jackets on, and it's been amazing for me to shoot in those conditions and not worry. There was one instance, I think 3 or 4 years ago, where I think it was EM1 Mach 2 and a 40 to 150 around my neck. We were walking in the Svalbard in the Arctic, and I basically fell through the ice into the water. Cold as hell. Different discussion, but my camera went underneath. Must have been 5, maybe 10 seconds around my neck. I also had an older version of some other 3D camera in my pocket. All my tech would bust, but the camera didn't blink. No problem. Got out, shot.
And we would expect that. Very brief dunkings. We hear lots of people slipping in rivers and things like that. And amazing. Whilst we can't guarantee that as a company, we see lots of cases of things like this as well. And I think the one thing that we have appreciated across the years is the improvements that we've made to that weather sealing. So IPX1 was great. We were the only company with an IPX1 rating. Now we're think we're still the only company with an IP53 rating.
That's pretty good.
And we've enhanced that by adding the fluoride coatings to lenses. So we had people come in and say, well, it's all very well being able to shoot in the rain, but if there's water drops all over the front of my lens, I'm not going to get a photograph anyway.
Sure.
So the fluoride coating effectively creates a hydrophobic environment on the front of that lens. So if it does rain, the water just runs off.
Yeah.
So these are the stages of evolution through that weather ceiling. We're very proud of it as well.
It's impressive. So, I mean, it sounds by the sound of it, we're aiming at outdoors people, nature, wildlife, landscape. So just, Mark, to swing back to you, from a target market, who are we looking at for this kind of technology?
I think there's two elements to it. One is a story about marketing. Quite often, we get a bit of feedback of people saying, oh, why do you always focus on certain areas? That's a marketing lesson. There's no point in trying to compete with everybody everywhere.
Absolutely.
So there's nothing to stop you using any photography kit or anything virtually. Mm. But if you're in a studio, you don't have to move things around so much. So a large format camera is often more suitable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got plenty of people using our kit for studio work, but that also doesn't really get you any help from the weatherproofing.
Sure.
But if you said, okay, we need to pick areas where we do stand out, then the weatherproofing, the portability, particularly with the telephotos, and then little nuances like the fact that the format gives you close-up capability with tele lenses, all comes together with a bunch of other technology that we've introduced over the years to suit outdoor activity when you're moving around. Now, you can say, where does that fit with landscape? That's a little bit more nuanced because you can use, again, almost any camera for a landscape shot. It's up to you. That gets more into the computational stuff that we do in the recent years, which some people love. So the message overall has to be, what are the key benefits when you put the whole system together?
Yes.
And where do they suit the most? Mm-hmm. And that's where you end up with wildlife and particularly birding recently, because it's true to say that 3 or 4 years ago, the speed of the focusing and the shutter, you know, sequential shooting wasn't quite there for real high-end
shot.
But now it is. And I think that's the other evolution in the system is the power and speed. So it all comes together to suit certain things better than others.
100%. I want to jump to the computational photography in a second, but just to look ahead a bit, we spoke about this with Ian as well. The future of the brand and looking at the outdoor world, I mean, just can you elaborate a little bit on that? What is the shift for the future and the branding of OM Systems as an outdoor brand, as a photography brand? What are we looking at here?
I think we're recognizing that, and this is not unique to us, the whole industry recognizes that phones are forever catching up with more and more aspects of general photography. And we're all guilty of using them. So you have to then say, okay, where do we fit? There's lots of people loving using cameras for wildlife, landscape as ever, but increasingly for landscapes, people are thinking, oh, I'll take my phone, it's portable. They're even weatherproof now, so it's starting to chip into that area.
Yeah.
What we're trying to say is there are a lot of people who enjoy being outdoors in general, and they're not necessarily photographers. So the crossover bit is to try and convince more people who just love the idea of being outdoors, trekking, being out in nature, whatever it may be, and say, okay, we're a brand for you. If you're thinking of taking photography a bit more seriously, then come to us. That's the general direction.
Yeah. I think it's a beautiful thing and I'm being selfish here from my point of view. I can lift heavy things, but I'm lazy when I travel. I don't want to track a big bag of stuff along with me.
No.
But what's happening as well, I think, and I've said this in previous episodes, is that the world of photographic travel, wildlife safaris, photo safaris, things like this, it's changing very quickly. And a lot of people are, and this is from over the last 3 years, maybe since COVID, where people who travel with us, they're more into the experience of travel rather than judging the success of a trip by the images they get. So where in the past, you would travel with all these big, big, big cameras, now it becomes, I want to have the experience and document the experience of my outdoor adventure, my safari, my expedition, whatever it is, versus I'm going there to take pictures and then see what else happens. So it's a beautiful, when you guys mentioned this when we spoke with Ian as well, it's such a cool thing to know because we're planning new expeditions, which is experiential. And this is the perfect little kit, and not little in a bad way, just it's an amazing small package you can take with that still has the power. I think it's a beautiful direction to go in. It's just from what we've seen in the travel photographic side of things, I think it's golden. It's absolutely golden.
No, I think that's the case. And when we talked about the OM5, which is more, I think it's more compact generally, we're chatting to a couple of the people who we started working with in that area, and they said, well, if we're going to go out all day, carry food, water, blister plasters, you name it.
Yeah.
So the camera's only one part of that experience, and the smaller it is, the better.
Yeah.
And I think it's also about the camera not being the focus all the time.
Agreed.
It's fun that always creeps in. Because it's nice to have it that it switches on quickly and you can use it intuitively, but you're not necessarily, or the bulk of people are not necessarily there just to take pictures, because then they'll miss out on all the other stuff. I think
absolutely agreed.
That's the message.
The amazing thing, I was in the Masai Mara once and I was standing behind my guests, which we always do, they take preference, but I had the EM1X on the 300mm F4. And I was literally standing at the back with one hand out the vehicle, flipped the screen. So I was shooting effectively for 600mm handheld behind and getting some amazing shots. That's to me what helps. I don't have to worry about carrying and moving. It's an amazing thing. Mark, you mentioned the computational side of it as well, David. So one of the things which people always ask about is pro capture. So Dan, your technical kind of talk for layman, can you explain to people what it is? Because it literally feels like magic.
Yeah, it is. We used to joke about it being, you know, stuff that we'd discovered from aliens that hadn't been announced yet. it's the computational stuff in itself is really magical stuff, and it's very clever coding is basically what it is. We obviously cannot change physics, so we can't change the way that light works in general, and you know, the rules of photography kind of stay the same to a certain degree, but what we can do is manipulate everything around it, and that's what the computational modes kind of do. ProCapture works effectively by ethereally recording time whilst you're concentrating on the moment. And then at the point where you decide you want to release the shutter, which ultimately, if you're watching something that's very quick moving, as humans, we have a relative lag to our responses from sight to action.
Yes.
Whilst we think we're very quick, actually, the best of us perform at about half a second lag in time. The worst of us, like me, are a lot longer than a half a second. So ultimately, what ProCapture is doing is you can set the parameters up as to how many shots you want in time, and those shots are specific to the shutter speed. So if your shutter speed is, you know, 1/1000th of a second, and you decide that ProCapture is going to buffer 30 of those, then it's constantly buffering 30 1/1000th of a second images that's happening in real time, but it's not writing them into the camera's memory card. It's just holding them in the internal buffer. So if you release that halfway press, which is what's causing that buffering, then those images disappear into the ether. They're gone. But if you decide to commit and your little lag happens and you go, there, the bird took off. Oh, they pressed the button. But actually, by the time you press the button, the bird's feet are well off the ground. ProCapture actually captured those images when it was back on the ground and wrote it to the memory card. And the way that this works is that it's very specific to the frames per second drive mode that you choose to use. So you can use either the fastest that we do, which is 120 frames per second, but that would be fixing it in a point in space and time. Very zone-focused kind of techniquing. Or you can use the still ridiculously quick up to 50 frames per second.
That's crazy.
And then use a continual sort of focus tracking technique with that as well. That's basically how it works. Yeah. It's a little time machine function.
Yep. I must be honest, this is why it's designed for wildlife, I think. I've been able to get, and some of my clients have been able to get, images we never would have. The one instance, we were photographing breaching humpback whales, and where you have, with ProCapture, you do what you just said in very nice terms, flat water, and you get it from the moment where the nose breaks the water all the way through. You would never get that. It's been a game changer for wildlife. It literally has. It's been absolutely insane.
And I think the really important thing about ProCapture is that we've had it for so long. We were the first consumer manufacturer to create a feature that did this. And we're still the only one that does it in this way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of other people will use the premise of time and they'll buffer 3 seconds worth of time. And we buffer shots worth of time. And so then it's all relevant to the physics of your shutter speed and everything else that goes around that. What's really, really clever is that the newer OM1 Mark II is capable of having a full pre-shot buffer and zero aftershots. So we've continuously evolved this feature, which originally started at sort of 14 pre-shutter shots up to a maximum of 99 in total.
Yes.
That includes all the rest. Then we increased that to 35 as we moved through the models at EM1 Mark III and then the OM1. And then the OM1 actually brought us to 70 possible pre-shutter shots, which would leave then 29 after you press the shutter if you used all of them.
Yeah.
OM1 Mark II will allow you to use a full 99 pre-shutter shots so that when you press that button, all of those shots happened in the past and no future shots are taken, which is a very specific kind of niche of using the feature. Mm. But if you're shooting things like hummingbirds, leaping lizards, tiny lizards that move at the speed of lightning, breaching whales or, you know, kingfishers, things like that, that's kind of a really key place. Yeah. And it's just interesting as to how that's evolved in that one feature alone. And we've had it for, I want to say 6 years now.
Yeah. It's been amazing. It's probably one of the things most people ask me about on safaris is, bro capture, or you'll show them an image you just got and they're like, holy hell, you're amazing. I'm like, no, I have to confess, it's actually, there's this thing called pro capture.
Your reactions are like lightning, but only pretend lightning.
Yeah, be one with the whales. Kind of
exactly.
What are the features on the new OM2? What are the new computational stuff that's come in on the new model?
So what we've done is we've enhanced some of the previous features. So the pro capture has that enhancement of being a full 99 pre-shot shots. Really, really importantly to the genres that we're heavily developing in at the moment is the live neutral density filters. So this is something that we put in to EM1 Mark III. We obviously then brought it into the OM range as well. And on each iteration, we've kind of improved the level of neutral density filter algorithm in camera that we can use. And we've now got it up to 128 ND, which is fantastic.
Wow. Okay.
Really, really intense. So we've got this huge level of ND filter that you can use straight away in the camera, which almost completely removes the need for any physical ones unless you really need heavy stoppers, you know, and some people still do. But you can use that in conjunction with the in-camera filters as well.
Amazing.
The very important bit that we introduced was something called live GND, which is a live graduated neutral density filter can cut as a soft, medium, or hard grad. You can change the pivot point in the screen as to where that grad is, and you can angle it through variations of 15 degrees as well, anywhere on the screen. And it's a superb addition to this system when used with things like landscape photography. Mm. Yeah, it's bonkers to use.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, recently in Iceland, I had the 8 to 25 on my OM1. And then you've got to put the filters and the ND and everything gets splashed. And this is just golden. It's absolutely, it's magic.
It really is. Because it cuts down, I think, not to say that you'll stop using physical filters. I think they're very much still a big part
100%.
Of, very, you know, particularly pro landscape photographer kit bags. But 70% of the opportunities will be able to use what the camera's been given. And if we look at how we've historically manipulated live ND when we first started, it would be at, you know, ND16, and we went to 32, 64, and now 128 as that evolution happens. We can hope that live GND would then follow suit with kind of future iterations as well. So the way that the company is designing these computational features is very specific to those areas that we've been, you know, invested and developed in.
Yeah. I think it's great. For me, doing what I do, it's great to hear that it's going that direction, the outdoor experience, and making it easy. I've got one more question for each of you guys. Mark, how would you guys deal with, because this is something as well that I know myself, Michael, who shoots OM system with me on this side, the question people always have, and I'll caveat that by saying most people who ask this question only post to Instagram anyway where the pictures are this big, right? Oh. Is they worry about what is the quality of the Micro Four Thirds versus full frame, and how do you talk someone around that? If you know, so that they come with wide, but it's a small. Smaller isn't good. It's a small sensor. Bigger sensor is better.
Yeah, I think it's and again, things have evolved quite a lot. If you were shooting in, it's still the case. We worked with somebody a few years back who often said, there's always a limit on light at some point, and if you haven't got any light, your picture's going to be rubbish. So you're always working at the margins. We've been fairly aware that there are certain times of the day when all cameras are going to struggle, and therefore it's how late can you shoot or how early can you shoot, and you know almost from trying to get those times. There are, and what I'm leading up to is, quality-wise, we really don't think there's a problem, and there's different elements to it, because it isn't just about the number of pixels, it's how the lenses were developed to fit with it. That's a big part, particularly when you get to the edges. This system's always been designed from scratch to be telecentric. We haven't talked about it for a while, but that means it's sharp edge to edge, and that's not usually the case when sensors get larger. You can talk a lot about sensitivity and dynamic range. There are differences. Less and less of an issue because the processors are getting better, but also the post-processing is getting a lot more sophisticated. And if you ask the guys who are shooting at the margins, they will always push it up to higher and higher ISOs. And where needed, they'll use some pretty fancy software nowadays, and it deals with it. So it's about, everything's always about a compromise. If you buy a huge car, you can't park it in a multi-story. So, you have to figure it out. We're not defensive about it, because it's a lot better than, certainly there's very less difference than there used to be. It just depends what you want.
Yeah.
We've lost you, Jerry.
Sorry, there I am. I'm talking away. No, it makes 100% sense. It's I've had that often where people are like, they've got their big full frame and the 600 F4 and everything. And not that it's a competition, but it's like, you know what, let's go. Because I think if you are photographically literate through the entire digital photographic process, from picking up the camera, composition, dialing in your settings, getting the shot, managing your exposure and so on, and you understand what's possible in post, there is, I mean, I've shot in pretty much any lighting condition, and I've walked away every time with stuff that I like. So it's different. The more you know, the better it gets. And that includes these days, the post-processing. It's a big deal. I've printed images off my EM1X and stuff. That's huge. It looks amazing. So it's just, I think
People have been doing that. People have been doing that for years. And the whole image size thing is why are you printing an image anyway? Because if you wanted to do a billboard, you don't stand a foot from a billboard. You see it from 50 yards away.
Exactly.
And it's the same principle. Now, I think the noise has traditionally been an area that people get aerated about. That's less and less of an issue than it used to be because of post-processing. But the same thing's all the way through. It's a convenience factor. So you have to factor in whether you'd have the camera with you at all. Situation.
Exactly.
And if it's small enough to carry with you, you would, and if it's too big, you wouldn't. So,
There's a couple of other really key areas to think about when approaching the conversation of quality versus sensor size and anything else. Photography is a very holistic thing, and each one of us has these different compartments of stuff that needs to fit into how we do our photography.
Yeah.
And that can boil down to the way that some of us will post-process a raw image intensely, depending on what goes on. And then some, we're seeing larger and larger parts of our market specifically that we just can't do that afterwards, and we'll shoot JPEG in camera, and those are their final images. Now, the really good thing about shooting JPEG within the camera is that the camera is going to compress this in its native language. It's going to do loads of work for you. There's a hint of interpolation going on. And what you get out of that is a really beautifully fine JPEG that can be cropped into if you need to.
Nice.
It can be printed very large and things like that. And that's an evolution of how cameras have developed in general as well. So I think because we say, for example, we have X, hundreds of thousands of users, there will be X hundreds of thousands of different ways that they're each going to want these final images to come through. So that's where kind of holisticness comes from. And whilst we do have these fantastic post-processing opportunities in third-party software, in our own software as well, which shouldn't be sniffed at because the OM workspace is a massive development from what was Olympus workspace.
Absolutely.
Boiling down to small things like we have a feature called the Focus Analyzer in OM mm-hmm. workspace, which will allow you to cull down 100 images down to 10 images that the software is deeming to be the sharpest ones in that particular, you know, selection.
That's done.
So things like that. And so we're all using this sort of post thing in a different way. And I think we shouldn't rule out the fact that a lot of photographers are taking JPEGs. They are uploading them straight to social media.
Yep.
They are being viewed on big, small screens and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there is no point in being defensive about that 100%. Small, larger sense of quality thing anymore. 10 years ago, it was a battle that was being fought every day.
Yes.
Now we've got stacked backside illuminated sensors that increase dynamic range, low light focusing, high ISO performance. All these things have changed since the days of that sort of standard CMOS sensor that you really wouldn't push above 800 ISO.
Yeah, the old days, long time ago.
The old days, it feels like the old days now. So much has changed, though, in that kind of base thing. And if you think about that, you know, that sensor's the heart of the camera. That's why the OM1 was such a beautiful thing to come out of the transition between Olympus to OM system.
Sure.
Because it changed something so integral and so important that I think Martin probably agree with me that needed to change quite some time before it was changed. You know, and I think we finally got something that made a massive difference to this new system.
Mm. Yeah.
And it works really well.
Yeah. I think that holistic idea that you guys speak about is phenomenal because, again, for me, and I had breakfast with Ian and with Gareth, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. And the thing as well is for me, and I started shooting Olympus, I think, end of 2015, 2016. And it's been the experience thereof. It's traveling lighter. It's being able to be mobile, walking anyway, in the Arctic, in Mara Pools, wherever we're walking, it's a pleasure. And I'm still getting the quality out. So if you look at the holistic, it's not just about the images anymore. The world is changing. It's so competitive. If you want to stand out just with your images, at least the process should be fun. And that's what it's about.
Off the back of that as well, speaking of a holistic process, we focus everything on how good the kit is, how good the lenses are, how easy it is to kind of go running around with a backpack full of gear on your back. But what is quite often overlooked, and I think it's because we do it so well and we've done it now for so long, is that background support that we give.
Yes.
You know, as a global team, we've offered so many free Zoom tutorial workshops over the last 4 years. Since the pandemic, we've offered a massive amount of education to those just joining the system, those that have been in it for 20 years. You know, we do regular YouTube content. We are constantly supporting our sort of base user groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost become a kind of a given now because it was, you know, Olympus and then becoming OM system supporting their people globally, online and in person was like this big crazy thing. And, you know, it was brilliant to be part of a team that helped get people through part of a pandemic with their photography just by being sat behind a screen like this.
Yes.
And now we're out of that and we're still able to do it. That's actually something that I think as team members, we become very proud of.
It's truly valuable.
We don't shout about it enough, I think. You know.
Mm. I'm going to chat about that workshop thing in a second. Just one last question and this is a personal, selfish question. I'm heading up to Svalbard, which is in the North Pole, basically. In 2 weeks' time, and I'm going to do an outdoors expedition where we out on the ice for basically 24/7, sleeping outside, tents, and average temperatures, minus 10 to minus 40 Celsius. So my thought is I'm going to take the OM1. Apparently it deals quite well with that kind of cold. I'm also thinking 12 to 40, and I'm thinking the wide one, 7 to 14, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a good option to go with.
That's my question is, do you think there's better lenses? Do you think my gear is correct? How many batteries do I need? Just because I'm talking extreme here.
I mean, I think personally, it would then depend on what you're taking the wide angle for. So if you're taking the wide angle for the day stuff, I don't think the 7 to 14 would be the right choice. I think the 8 to 25 would be a better choice.
Oh, really?
Two reasons for that is that you've got a little bit more support if you did want to use any filters on the front of it because it has that opportunity rather than that very spherical front and fixed hood of the 7 to 14.
Yeah.
If you said to me, I'm taking the wide angle because I want to do night astro star shots, I'd say take the 7 to 14. So these are that's the sort of the flip-flop side of it.
Makes sense.
you know, battery wise, I would definitely hope that you're going to get one battery a day. Definitely have two or three if you're going to be out there in the middle of nowhere anyway. But remember as well, the power delivery charging in these cameras.
Yes.
So I have a mountain of these. They were 45 watt, now 100 watt power delivery chargers.
Yes.
That I can use to charge the camera when I'm not using it, or sneak it in my back pocket with a little cable and carry on using it if I need to. That's whilst it's charging. Mm-hmm. So these opportunities are things that we quite often forget about. It's just sling a couple of those chargers in. They'll do your phone, they'll do your camera,
brilliant.
You know, everything like that.
Mm.
And then, yeah, I think realistically, just think about which wide you want to take based on when you're going to use it. Time wide, 8 to 25 is brilliant. Nighttime wide, 14.
Okay. And cameras, OM1 or EM1X? Look, Gareth, if you're listening to this, I wouldn't mind taking an OM2, just saying. You have my number.
If you can, get one sent. I mean, if you for travel-wise...
obviously, size, OM1 would...
Shorter lenses would be better suited to the OM1.
Yeah. So there's no benefit for that EM1X in the cold. There's nothing it's going to give me more than...
You know, the benefit of that is the balance, really. So if you're using some super long lenses, EM1X, fantastic. But if you're really sort of thinking about having that marching around, you know, you're going to be gloved up. Small camera would be better,
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you very much. So just on this workshop you mentioned that you guys are doing. So what we spoke about is when we had this chat earlier last week is my guide. So I've got 7 guides who... We take people out into the field and we show them a good time. We show them how to photograph, teach photography, inspire. I'm trying to get them up to scratch on all the different brands. So some of them, Michael shoots OM with me. Some of the guys have used my cameras. They've taken it out. But what we're going to do, and we'll offline this until we have dates and we can maybe share it out. But we're going to look at, Dave, you coming online and doing kind of a workshop for us to dig into the system. The base, and we're going to target this to wildlife and nature photography, obviously. What are the features? What are the to knows? So what we're going to be doing is I'm going to chat to the guys. We're going to have a list of questions. What is the things that people ask about most on a safari? So we'll send that through and then we can do this. Is it still viable for us then to look at a later stage, once we've done this, to look at getting some of our clientele on board and doing a webinar and saying, listen, here's 45 minutes of why the OM2 plus X lens is the best for wildlife photography. Because I do think, like you said, I think there's massive value in getting it straight from you guys. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the really important thing that your guides are going to need to know is programming styles in the cameras. Yes. Because when they get caught in the middle of, you know, a trip and they need to know how to if somebody's accidentally reset their camera, they've got to build that program back up. So we can look at making sure that those guides have the knowledge to program these custom modes for different areas of photography.
Mm-hmm.
I think then for your own clients, it's really important that we can offer them a webinar based on the differences between why are we going to shoot it with macro and what macro features does it offer? Why are we going to shoot long telephoto and what features benefit that kind of wildlife long telephoto areas? You know, we can fill an hour with without blinking. So I think that is really, really beneficial. The two different stages are the guides need to know the deeper tech stuff so that they don't get lost in the menus and
100%.
Get a bit kind of like frustrated. And then customers need to know what suits them in terms of a feature set. Because as we always know, we only individually will use 25 to 40% of what the camera offers.
Absolutely.
In our choices of photography. Now, then someone else will use some of that and maybe 10% from somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So what we'll do is once we have dates and stuff, we'll put on the social channels and so on. I'm excited to work with you guys as well, because what we're doing from a Southern Africa point of view is we're almost looking at like a relaunch locally, because all these changes, we're looking at an outdoor kind of vibe to it. There's all these new products coming. There's the 150 to 400, which again, Gareth, you have my number, please. I'm just saying. So is to be able to get all of these things out into the field. And yeah, I think we're going to be working closely with you guys over the next few years, kind of themes, what we're putting out. So hopefully down the line, we can do this again. Guys, thank you very much for your time. Truly appreciate it.
Pleasure.
And would it be okay for you, if people have questions, they'll send them through to me and I can maybe just bounce them on to you guys and I can record later on again.
More than happy. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good way to do it, actually. We've tried this a few times. If people want to send a few questions in, we can do a quick follow-up session. That's one way to do it, rather than typing out loads of things. It's quite nice to get a 10 or 15 questions and come back and tackle
it. Just bang it up. That's awesome. Guys, thank you very much for your time. Mark, good luck with everything on that side. David, hope you feel better soon.
Thanks very much.
With whatever you're fighting, and we'll chat to you guys again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe. Cheers.
Take care now.
Right, so there you have it. Very interesting conversation. Great guys all around. We are going to be doing that workshop with the Wild Eye Guides. And then if there are any questions that you guys have, whether you shoot OM system or not, please hit me up, jerry@wildeye.com, and I'll get Dave and or Mark back on the podcast in future to answer any of your questions. So, like I said, I've been impressed. I've shot this camera everywhere, the brand. I've tried all the lenses, and it's amazing. It's made my experience of photography better. That you can be more in the moment instead of worrying about, oh my God, this lens is so heavy. So if you're new to photography, welcome, first of all. Go and check them out. I do recommend it highly from a full experience point of view. And if you are looking to change or you're looking for something else, why not give it a bash? Some of the new computational stuff opens up options that we've never, ever had before. Like, for example, that whale example that I used in the conversation. Anyway, just thanks again to Mark and David for their input and for taking part in the podcast. Thanks to OM System South Africa for the support. I've loved working with you guys, and I look forward to the road ahead. And it's an amazing experience to be shooting, creating, but not having to be, what's the word, weighed down. I'm going to leave it there. Guys, as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for lending your ears. I will chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Bye for now.